This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place Nation Pop Experience, Pop Goes to the Couch, is back. We're covering the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe streaming show on the Disney Plus. That is Hawkeye. Hello, I am Andy Atherton, one of your quarters. Oh, no, tonight we're thirds, because as usual, Sean is on assignment. He was taking in the latest showing of, I think it's Rogers is the name of the play on Broadway, waiting for his review, which should be on the next episode. But I'm here, you know, in the words of the titular title character, the city is flying, we're fighting an army of robots, and I have a bow and arrow. Nothing makes sense. Well, do these episodes make sense? Let's break them down with Scott Shiflett. He's here. Hey, Scott.
Andy, glad to be back. Glad to be here talking about another Marvel show. You know, they're the highlight of my Wednesdays now.
Ah, yes, very good. Yeah, look forward to it every week. And this one will be the next 5 weeks. Also joining us is Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Andy. Hey, Scott. We should be talking about The Mandalorian.
That's coming up. Well, it'll be the Book of Fett.
So. I'll take it, but I got a little too used to my Star Wars shows during the holidays. Two seasons of Mandalorian, real solid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, I think, I know we're talking about Hawkeye, but you know, it's going to be, I think we're going to, it's going to be a, Disney. I mean, it's going to be Marvel, Star Wars. Hopefully that's the plan where, you know, we don't have really long breaks between series, and maybe that's the way it's going to go after, Boba Fett. Could we get Ms. Marvel or Moon Knight? Maybe, but we'll see. I'm very excited. So I know we probably talked about this last time. We mentioned this a little bit at the end of the big What If retro pod we did. But let's kind of reiterate. What were your thoughts, your hopes, your anticipations, your fears, your worries about this series? Just kind of give a little Reader's Digest summary before we really dive in. I myself was very psyched. I like Jeremy Renner as an actor. I like Hawkeye. I think here's the thing. I'm a blank canvas. I have no comics reference, so I don't know whether it's good, bad, indifferent. I just see what I see on screen, and he is kind of seemed a little out of place, being a guy with great eyesight, basically, and great aim, and a decent fighter. Really, is what made him an Avenger. But you know, I think we're gonna this show's gonna, I think, improve on his legacy. And show his importance to the overall story, because you know he's basically has a young Avenger with him in this one, and he's going to be, from what I understand, handing the mantle over. So we'll see what happens. Scott, what were your thoughts before the series? What were your hopes, your dreams?
Just basically with you, like I've read some Hawkeye, like in the big Marvel events, and I feel that in the first Avengers movie, they definitely did him dirty, where he was basically Loki's bitch. And I think that really set a standard for most Marvel MCU fans to think that Hawkeye is just a joke, because like, oh, he can just shoot with his bow and arrow. But I've read some of him in the comics. He's a pretty well-respected Avenger in the comics. They were a little too ham-fisted, I think, in Avengers 2, but that's a whole another Joss Whedon issue that I have with that movie. Where they were ham-fisted with like, oh, look, he's not going after Nat. He has the secret family that no one knows about. And he thought he was going to die at the end, but then it was Pietro that died. Whatever. But, I really did enjoy like an Endgame where he's the Ronin, which we'll get to later this episode. Because this is, the sins of the past are coming back to haunt him, it appears.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you with the whole Age of Ultron where they, they kind of up his role. He's the one that doesn't get mind controlled by Wanda in the ship in Wakanda, and Or was it Wakanda? I'm not sure. It wasn't Wakanda. It was somewhere in Africa. Anyway, but they lead you. They show. I'm in the theater. It's like, oh, he has a family. Yeah, he's dead. He's dying in this movie, and they swerved us. So Tim, what were your thoughts going into the series? What were you hoping for, and what were you hoping not for?
I was hoping they would kill Clinton Barton in the first 5 minutes. Because I actually really like Hawkeye in the comics. I think he's a great supporting character. I'd say he's one. Nobody's going to say he's their like all time favorite character. Well, I'm sure somebody will. But when it comes to these sort of B-listers, just longtime team members of the Avengers and related Avengers spinoff teams, like, and Thunderbolt, certainly he had a good run there. Just a solid character. I've always gravitated towards him in the comics, but I just think MCU Hawkeye is such a bust. I think he sucks. I think he, if anything, got too much screen time in the first Avengers as just the idiot with the bow and arrow. Like, why does anybody care? And then, like, again, in Age of Ultron, as Scott mentioned, the whole secret family reveal, which I guess was designed to give him more depth, really just succeeded in making him an effectively totally different character from what I think of Hawkeye as being. So it just that didn't work for me. He's never really clicked in any of the films, and doesn't feel like the character as I understand him to be. Like, and that's definitely my comics bias bleeding through. But then you get into the Ronin stuff and Endgame, and I'm like, why are they doing this? This feels so tacked on and random. Just it feels like a studio note that just got dropped into the movie because, you know, maybe they want to sell Ronin action figures or merchandise because it is a cool look. Well, but beyond also, that, I didn't feel like it had any place in the movie. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, also, Tim, with the first, he's not even in Infinity War. So, right, like, yes. And I remember there being a lot of fan outrage. It's like, where the fuck is he at? Which is a very good question to ask. It's like, you know, he's supposed to be one of the Avengers, and it feels like it was like a seesaw with more of a yo-yo, where it's like in the MCU, you know, the people behind the scenes, they don't care about Hawkeye. They care too much. They don't care about him. They care too much. Yeah. They can't really seem to, like... Mm-hmm. Flat it out, and I hope they are able to with this series, which, you know, we'll be getting to shortly.
Yeah, so I'm being kind of facetious about the series. Ultimately, even though I don't like this interpretation of the character, I did want the series to be good. Like, I want all these series to be good. I want anything I watch to be good, and I definitely had some trepidations going in, but I was just hoping that I'd be wrong and it would like super blow me away and maybe even turn me around and get me out of my feelings towards MCU Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I think it's going to be a slow build, like at least the first, which is, you know, I think the pacing has been well. And, you know, we got a Thanksgiving gift. We got two episodes the day before Thanksgiving. So we will do both tonight. We're going to cover episode one, Never Meet Your Heroes, in the first half of today's show. And then in the second half, we will do episode two, Hide and Seek. So let's get to it. So the first episode starts off, we go back to New York City in 2012 to the Battle of New York. Kate Bishop listens to her parents argue in the next room. Her mother, Eleanor, tells her father, Derek, that he has a daughter to think of and that they hear Kate. And then they hear Kate. Derek goes talk to her who's in her bedroom pretending to be asleep. Kate says that she doesn't want to move, and her father says that they don't have to. When Derek talks about choices people make in the face of bad weather, Kate asks him what would he do in a hurricane. He says he would do what he always does, protect Kate. Derek tells Kate to have lunch with her mother and goes to his office. As Kate and Eleanor have lunch, Eleanor tells Kate to get the checkers from her room so they can play a game. As Kate sets up the board on her bed, she hears something flying outside. The building shakes, and panicked Kate goes to look for her parents. A Chitauri airship flies overhead, and Kate runs downstairs. Something smashes a hole in the side of their townhouse, and Chitauri soldiers see her and fly at her with their air sleds. Hawkeye shoots out of the sky and then dodges enemy blaster fire. Kate watches as Hawkeye leaps off a roof and then fires an arrow line so he can swing back into the building several floors below in that iconic shot from the first Avengers movie. Eleanor finds Kate and tells her that they have to leave, picks her door up, and runs through the house as it collapses around them. Later, Kate and Eleanor attend Derek's funeral. When the funeral is over, Kate asks her mother what happened if the Chitauri come back. Eleanor says that they won't, and if they did, that they won't because the heroes showed them what would happen if they did. Eleanor says that she has the greatest daughter in the world. Kate says that she needs to protect them, and Eleanor says whatever Kate needs, she's there for her. The girl tells Eleanor that she needs a bow and arrow, and for the next 9 years, Kate learns how to shoot a bow, fight, and perform acrobatics. So, I apologize for flubbing there a little bit. My dog decided to get a toy that has a squeaker in it. So,
I thought that was a baby crying for a minute.
I'll bite your tongue, Timothy. been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Wasn't
funny. Yeah.
Scott, what do you think of the opening of this episode?
This is something we had never really seen before with, you know, we hadn't seen it. We saw a little bit of it with the first Avengers movie, but we saw what the people from New York were thinking when the Chitauri were invading, which is very cool. And, you know, obviously it looks like Kate's dad was killed with that. And that's what, you know, made her, you know, Tim said no one's favorite was Hawkeye. Obviously Kate Bishop's favorite Avenger is Hawkeye. But I enjoyed it. It was a nice little thing. And I will say, hearing you read that back, I don't think that the Avengers battle in New York killed him. I think the mom might have, because she's in some shady things, as we'll get forward with the next two episodes. But, yeah, it sets the stage.
A convenient battle. Alien invasion to cover up murder, maybe. Who knows? Yeah, I kind of dig it, though, when they show a scene from another perspective that we know fairly well. Tim, what do you think of the opening?
I really like this opening sequence also. I think some people may have the criticism that they fall back too much on this Battle of New York with, like, these flashbacks. But it was a pivotal event and just the timeline of the MCU. And similar to Scott, I just appreciated the world building that we get to see, like not just the highlights of the battle itself from the film, but the impact it had on the citizens, how they responded not only to this event, but to these very larger than life figures, these superheroes. What are their opinions on each of these people individually, and what effect does it have on their lives? So I like those little touches. And it right away, it basically conveys to you why Kate would be such a Hawkeye fangirl. Because, again, why would this guy be anybody's favorite? Well, you see him in action, and he's kind of the only person you see in action from your vantage point, looking pretty impressive, firing, you know, 200 arrows at a time at these aliens on hoverboards. Like, that's pretty cool. And yeah, the whole thing with the dad, what's the rule? You don't see the body, then are they really dead? And if he is dead, we don't see exactly what happened there. Scott's right. Half the house blows up, but the mom survives. What happens to dad? And we'll get into some shady stuff surrounding Eleanor as this thing moves along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, like a lot of people, I go and watch like Nerdist or whatever, and you know, she has a comic presence or a president or whatever. She's based on somebody from the comics for the most part. I know they do take liberties when they translate them. All right, so then we move to present day. Kate climbs up on a rooftop and shoots an arrow at a bell in the tower of her academy that she's attending. Her friends Greer and Franny watch from below, and Greer calls Kate and watches as well as Kate hits the bell and emits a dull ring. Kate shoots another arrow that snags the pull rope, which rings the bell repeatedly. The vibration shakes the bell loose from its mooring, and a security guard catches Kate while Greer and Franny run. The musical Rogers, the musical, is performed on Broadway, and Clinton Barton and his two kids are in the audience. Actually, three. whoever wrote this review is terrible. Clint stares in disbelief at the portrayal of the Battle of New York City. His hearing aids turn all the way down and is particularly hurt by seeing Black Widow. His daughter Lila gets his attention and he points out that Ant-Man wasn't even there. The musical has a hero in it. A child in the audience sees Clint, waves to him, and Clint goes to the restroom. In the restroom, Clint uses the urinal, which has a hashtag Thanos was right. If I'm right remembering on it, yep. A man comes to your
written in Sharpie.
Next to Clint's. Are you sure it was Sharpie? I hope it was Sharpie. You know, a man comes to the urinal next.
Looks
to
like it's
Clint's.
Hard to remove. Yeah, I guess the idea.
Yes, recognizes Clint, has to take a selfie, which is something that you should always do. Always ask to take a selfie with a guy at the urinal. Clint tries to leave, and the man catches him at one of the sinks as Clint washes his hands. Afterward, Clint goes outside and crouches down. Lila comes out, asks her if she's okay. If he's okay, he says that it's just came up for some fresh air, and says that everyone knows that Natasha was his best friend. Clint hugs Lila and says the whole thing is ridiculous. Cooper and Nate then come out and join him. We chat. We go back to Kate, who's out shopping, and talks briefly to Eleanor, who says that she wants Kate to come over later and see her boyfriend, Jack Duquesne. When Kate goes home, Eleanor greets her and says that she's going to a charity auction. Eleanor complains about Kate destroying the bell tower and tells Kate that she's not invincible and shouldn't go out looking to be hurt. Kate then apologizes, and Eleanor suggests that Kate go to the auction with her. Her daughter shows her another medal she's won, and Jack comes in and greets Kate. The couple leave, telling Kate that they'll see her later at the party. Clint takes his kids out for dinner. Laura calls her family from home and asks how the trip is to New York City is going, and she says that she'll see them the next day. Once she hangs up, Clint promises they'll do things for Christmas that each of his kids like the most from the holiday and insists that it's going to be the best Christmas ever. The waiter tells him that the dinner is free because Clint helped save the city. All right, so Tim, we get to present time, and we get to see a little more grown-up Kate and the shenanigans she gets into, as well as, Clint just trying to enjoy Christmas with his kids.
Yeah, well, I'll say Kate doesn't come across as all that grown up, unfortunately, in the scene, and not too likable either, because the way they set it up initially is it made it seem like she was on some kind of mission, or she was doing this for some particular reason, or had some cause in mind. And
I thought it was a sorority prank or something.
Yeah, it was like it turns out to just be like a prank, I guess. They don't really say much more about it. It is an impressive display of her archery acumen, I guess. But just for what it says about her as a character, it's kind of like, you know, God, what a fucking asshole, you know, destroying this historical monument, I guess. But I don't know that really presented her in the most positive light. I don't know that it was really meant to, but just I'm not getting a vibe from Kate where I'm like, you know, all that into this character. I get that she's good at shooting the bow and arrow, but beyond that, what do I think of her as a person? Well, not much so far. And of course, you know, she comes from this very wealthy family. We meet the mom and her, I guess, soon to be stepfather, who she immediately dislikes. And we're not really given any reason to dislike. He just seems kind of superficially charming. But that name, Jack Duquesne, familiar to comics readers. So, you know, might be something there to keep an eye on. Why are there so many swords in the house? Big hint. Then we cut away to Clint at Rogers the Musical. This thing looks truly insufferable, doesn't it? Like it really does feel like the type of thing that just kind of pompous Broadway types would go all in on.
I think it's something that tourists are like. If you're from New York and we were through the Battle of New York, or you just, it's just something like you just go to, like, you know, just to say you went, but it would be tourists all over.
And it would be impossible to get tickets for also.
Yeah.
And it would just be a fucking atrocious, which it definitely looks like it is. So that's kind of funny. And this is also, is this where we establish as well that Clint is hard of hearing? He's deliberately turned down his hearing aid, which seems like a good call. watching this thing. But that's also a nice little nod to the comics that we hadn't seen previous to this point with this character. They don't give a concrete reason for it, but we do get that later on. We get that little montage sequence of like, oh, could have been this, could have been that, like all the shit that he's been through. Of course, he's going to have some problems with his hearing at this point in his life. So I like that. The guy trying to get the selfie looks like a real D-bag. So it's painting the picture for sure.
All right. Scott, what are your thoughts on this scene?
I enjoyed like the introduction to Kate. Like it showed that, like, you know, because I think like you said it perfect earlier, a young Avengers. I think that's what we're going to get. I don't know if it's going to be a Disney Plus movie only on Disney Plus or a live action. But I think this is showing like, you know, oh, she's carefree and young. Like, you know, she'll be on the Young Avengers because I think what we know, I think we're getting a Young Avengers vs. Thunderbolts movie or a TV show. But I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. But like her destroying the clock tower, I thought was kind of like funny because like we're on Disney, so like we need something whimsical like that. As for like the Rogers musical, I would 100% go see that. So Sean, you're gonna have to tell me how it was. But I did love, like, you know,
fucking Mark.
I will say that, like, it shows that, like, he's not, like, Clint's not a superhero like Thor or, you know, with the super serum like Captain America, where he does have injuries with his hearing aid because he looks to be a relatively young guy. I know he has three kids and two of them seem to be teenagers and probably should be in their 20s. But remember, they were blipped. So it's like Spider-Man where they're stuck in that age. So they were, you know, they're stuck at like 14 and 16, it looked like. And, you know, the other one looks like he's like 4 or 5 because he's a mistake. I mean, a whoopsie baby. So. But
your inner Sean, Jesus.
I thought that was a good move. And like, you know, it shows that he doesn't like to be really a hero because like when the guy, okay, of course, the guy, like, I don't like to be talked to anyway, like in a bathroom, like besides like someone holding a door for me. But like, you know, the guy wants a selfie. And then, like, you see Thanos was right. And, you know, Thanos had some good points from what we've seen after the blip. But also,
we see... Are you talking about in the MCU or in our life today?
I'm just going to leave that out there for
reality
for the listeners. But yes, he was right about both. But it seems that Clint doesn't like to be recognized as a hero because he seemed a little off-put when... they gave him the meal for free. Like, it seems like he didn't like that. And also, I will say, I'm going to get this out of the way now. I think they're wasting Linda Cardellini as just right first two episodes. I know we're getting ahead, Andy. Mm-hmm. She's just on the phone. And it's like, she's just an actress that is wasted in the MCU right now.
Was that a COVID thing? Do we think?
I mean, really, where would she be in this? Would she be, like, staying in a hotel room?
I'm just wondering if Linda Cardellini, the actress, is like maybe filming something overseas or was at the time that this was.
I mean, I don't think she's getting the Suzanne Summers treatment because she pissed off people for more money. No, I just think, you know, you want to have the kids there, but you want to have a reason for them not to be there that long. You know what I mean?
But like, I legit thought
back home, it gives them an excuse like, oh, they got to get home to their mother.
Yeah, I legit thought, like, we were going to find out that Hawkeye was having, like, a breakup and, like, he was getting the kids for, like, the weekend or something.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking at first.
So, essentially, they're going for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, pretty much, it sounds like.
With Clint as Steve Martin.
Could be. All right, so... we pick up with Kate going to the charity party, and Armand, Jack's uncle, approaches her and remembers her from when she used to come to this place for brunch with her parents. He hopes Kate will wear something more appropriate than the suit that she's in for Eleanor and Jack's wedding. Armand's grandson, Armand the 7th, comes over, and he and Kate awkwardly exchange greetings. Armand tells Kate that she needs to have a chat with her mother and leads Armand the 7th off. Going over to Eleanor, Kate accuses her mother of being engaged. Eleanor asks Jack to give him some privacy. Once he leaves, Kate knows that it's fast, and Eleanor asks her daughter to be happy for her. Kate says that she is and goes out for some air. Outside at the gate on the street, Kate sees a dog watching her. He runs off and Kate goes back inside. She overhears Eleanor and Armand arguing, and he says that he has powerful friends and then walks away from Eleanor. When Eleanor walks past Kate, Kate asks her mother what the argument was about. Eleanor says that she has no idea and then goes back to the party. Kate follows Armand through the hotel where the party is, posing as a waitress in her suit. She takes a tray down to the wine cellar where Armand went, and Kate finds him in a room with other people waiting for an auction to begin. Jack joins his father, and Armand tells him that he's reached his breaking point with Eleanor and things are about to get ugly. I think it's actually his uncle. Again, F you to whoever wrote this. Jack tells Armand to leave it alone, and the auction begins. Another waiter gives Kate a tray of champagne flutes to take around, and she bluffs the waiter into thinking that she belongs to him because Gary sent her there. The auctioneer reminds the bidders that the items are for home display only, and Kate sees Jack and Armand together. Gary approaches her and asks why she's there. She says that she's quitting, hands Gary the tray, walks off. She hides next to a door where men are torturing someone. So, yeah, it's starting to get a little interesting here with what's really up with the mother, with the fiancé and his family. So things are starting to get an eyebrow raised. Scott, what are you thinking of this this part of the show? Scott?
Not much, apparently.
Sorry, I was on mute. I was blabbering my whole life away. It pisses me off because the mom was just like, oh, we're going someplace in public. Oh, by the way, I'm engaged. Oh, wait, she doesn't tell her. So Armand shows up and is like, oh, yeah, your mom's about to marry. And she's like, what? And then we see like this tense argument, which makes me believe that, you know, her mom isn't as goody two shoes as it appears. Because, you know, we've seen her in like five scenes and three of the five, she's arguing or, you know, kind of being a bitch. So, you know, but it was nice to see. And then, you know, I know Tim's going to have an issue with like the scene where they're doing the bidding and stuff. But I do think that Jack saying to Armand, like Armand saying, you don't have this money, and Jack saying soon it'll be mine. It was pretty cold blooded. I just thought, you know, it also shows how quick Kate is with thinking on her feet, with saying like, oh, Greg sent me here. So as she was trying to find her way around.
Greg, yes. Gary doesn't.
Lurking in the wine cellar. Yeah.
Yes. Tim, what are your thoughts on this scene?
So I guess we get a useful little info dump from Fred Trump and Barron in this scene with Kate explaining some of the family dynamics and whatnot. But no, that was you know, it was charming enough, I suppose. And some of the banter between Armand and Jack, you know, a little bit reminiscent of Sean holding the will over his his benefactors. So he's not here to defend himself, but just had to get that. I don't think he would disagree necessarily. Not that he's as old or as near death as Armand, as we will find out. But Kate's sort of sleuthy resourcefulness, you know, slinking down into the wine cellar, following this guy. Some intrigue abounds. There's not much more I can say about it.
All right. So then we get the auction starts, and the vigilante Ronin's retractable sword from the wrecked Avengers Tower is up for bid next. Armand bids for it, and Jack bids against him. Kate hides as the men come out of the room and then goes back to the auction. Armand outbids Jack, and Armand wins the sword. As Ronin's suit is put up for bid next, a bomb blows out the wall, shaking the entire building. Jack recovers and picks up the Ronin sword. Meanwhile, masked men come through the hole the bomb made, which orders to find the watch. The Ronin suit falls to the floor near Kate. Jack goes back to help Armand, and the two of them head for the exit. One of the masked men prepares to shoot them, and Kate, wearing a Ronin suit, attacks the masked man. She takes him down, but one of the masked men open fire, and Kate tells the bidders to get out. Eleanor goes outside with the other guests and calls Kate. Kate ducks back in and back and forth between wine racks with the toughest bottle in history, fighting intruders, and grabs that said bottle from a nearby rack and uses as a weapon against him and others that are coming after her. Outside, Jack catches up to Eleanor. Kate fights her way through the intruders and runs through the hole, and the man loading up the items and intruders are stealing find a watch and tagged as being from Avengers compound. The dog bites one of the man's cuff legs and pulls him down. Kate arrives and kicks the man unconscious. The dog runs off and Kate chases after it, pulls the dog out of the path of an oncoming truck. The intruders try to follow but realize police are coming and have no choice but to flee. Clint brings his kids back to the hotel room where they're staying. Lila turns on the TV, which shows a newscast about the bomb at the party. There's footage of Kate wearing a Ronin costume, and Clint remembers the criminals he killed as Ronin. All right, Tim, so we get, a little more intrigue here, a little more connection to the past. What do you think of this part of the show?
All right.
Listen up, mother.
This is where things start to fall apart for me, because one of my biggest, like, I can't even call it a pet peeve, because I feel like it's a real issue when it comes to drama, is that when so much of the plot hinges on just a pile of coincidences, it really, really takes me out of things. I'm not saying that doesn't happen occasionally, especially in things like soap operas or any story that's a little bit more pulpy, certainly in superhero media. You'll see, the occasional coincidence dropped in just to sort of drive a little bit of that melodrama. But here it's like the entire story, the entire plot is really dependent on, number one, Kate is this Hawkeye fangirl. Number two, she happens to walk in on this super secret supervillain auction taking place in the basement of this place where she and her mother are hosting a party. Number three, it happens to get bombed and attacked by the tracksuit mafia. Number four, one of the items up for auction is all of the paraphernalia of Ronan, who happened to be a former identity of Hawkeye. Number five, Kate does not know Clint Barton was Hawkeye, but she assumes all the Ronin gear and picks it up and can use it and be super badass. And I don't even know what number we're up to here. Pizza Dog, who we met earlier, turns out to be a real hero and has to be rescued and intersect with Kate's story. It's just a bunch of nonsense all piled together where you want to see your main character, who I think Kate is meant to be one of our, titular characters. She is a Hawkeye. I'd like to see her have a more active role in driving the plot, not just stumbling into things that happen to be connected to her interests or just being in the right place at the right time. That to me just feels super, super sloppy and super lazy. And, maybe it shouldn't, but it just really impacted my enjoyment of this episode. Like, it was just way too much to try to suspend my disbelief. I know we're in a superhero universe, but when you take those kinds of leaps in logic, that wouldn't work like in any fictional story. I just get a little bit put off by it. So, yeah, I wasn't real on board with all this. I also found like the fight scenes here to be quite lacking, a bit hard to follow. Maybe that's by design, since they're in kind of claustrophobic quarters, like she's ducking around in this wine cellar. But I don't know, it felt kind of uninspired compared to other things we've seen, especially in these shows, and especially compared to something like a Netflix Marvel show, which I think in a lot of ways, this series feels like a lesser version of a Netflix Marvel show. And that's a shame, because I really, for the most part, enjoyed that Netflix output. And I'd love to see something more in that vein. And this felt like kind of a pale imitation of it. So, yeah, this is where it starts to lose me.
All right. Scott.
I think with like the black market bidding going on, I think it was there because Armand was there, and it took me as he was like the ringleader of this. So since he knew he was going to be at this banquet, he was like, "We can have it here, Tim." So that's how I took it as.
I'm sure. I mean, there's a reason for it, certainly. But I guess I'd like to see Kate, when I say take a more active role in just driving the events of the plot. Like, maybe she's already on to Armand. Like, maybe she's been investigating or has a hunch. Or maybe she knows that the Ronin costume has been stolen because she had a previous run-in with these tracksuit mafia guys. Or maybe she even knows, somehow she figured out that Clinton Barton was Ronin, and she wants to retrieve this in order to, like, save his ass or something, because that's not public knowledge. You know what I mean? Just to have her, just so that there's more of a stake in it for her, and to make her seem like these events just aren't happening around her, and she happens, again, to fall into them, and things proceed from there.
Yeah, it seemed like her stakes were she heard like this heated argument between Armand and her mother, and was wanting to see what the hell was going on with Armand. You know, I get called a fucking mark for this, but you know, like, I thought it, like, yes, it was a lot of coincidences, but like, I just like sort of like just expect it with all these movies. But I will say, like, I think she would have been shot dead, so that's, like, the only thing, but this is a comic book show.
Well, yeah.
But I think it was more just to show off her fighting and show off all her skills, which we had already sort of seen with, like, all the trophies and, like, saying how, like, she won another gold medal for this, and they got to move out some of the younger ones. But one thing that I want to know is, what the hell happened to Avengers Tower that this watch that the tracksuit mafia was going after and the Ronin suit was taken? Because I want to know what happened with that. So hopefully the series goes into that as why Avengers Tower was basically just robbed. Because, you know, in No Way Home, that takes place before the blip, where the Vulture tried to steal all the stuff. And that also, since it's before the blip, that means no Ronin costume. So how the hell did all this happen? That's what I want to know, and hopefully they investigate that.
I saw some rumors online about who the possible owner, albeit probably a temporary owner of Avengers Tower, will be.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people are calling it for it will become the Baxter Building, which it may at some point. I think it has a good chance, or the headquarters of Oscorp. I'm hearing now that possibly, and it's not confirmed at all. I take this as rumor. But it could be Wilson Fisk could be the owner of Avengers Tower. I don't know. Does he have ties to the tracksuit mafia and stuff?
He has ties to everyone.
I know. I'm sure. Got his finger in all the organized crime pie, so to speak.
But he does have ties to a character we meet. At the end of our second episode.
Yes, so. we'll get there. So. All right, so let's finish up this episode, and then we'll take a break, and we'll talk about episode 2. All right, so Kate takes the dog to her apartment, gives it cold pizza, and she then finds out Armand's address on her phone. She goes there, breaks in, looks around, and finds Armand dead on the floor. Armand's
with a stab wound. By the way, Andy, I can't remember if you said this. My apologies. The sword that Armand and Jack were bidding over, we see Jack take during the whole tussle. So sorry.
Yes, the Ronin sword.
I forgot if that was mentioned. My apologies. My brain's all over the place. But you saying that remembered it, because I am going to go on a little bit of a rant on my next talking point. My apologies.
I believe it's worth mentioning again because it's a very, I think it's an important, probably an important plot point that we're going to learn. Armand's wife comes in. Kate slips out and runs down the street. She finally stops running. And she's out of breath, and a number of intruders that are Russian in tracksuits, known as the Tracksuit Mafia, find her, come after her. Kate tries to run off, but they cut her off in their vehicles. She fights her way past them, gets into an unlocked parked car on the street, and then goes to lock the doors to try to protect herself. She actually gives one dude a bulldog into a car, which is pretty damn cool. The thugs start to break the windows, but then someone knocks them out, and the new arrival takes down the rest of the thugs, yanks Kate out of the car, drags her into a nearby alley, and it turns out it's Clint who yanks the Ronin mask from Kate. Kate realizes who Clint is and asks who she is. And she's like, "You're Hawkeye." And he's like, "Who are you?" So, and that's where the episode ends. So, Scott, go away. Go with your rant.
Okay, this is a fucking open and shut case. Sorry, I didn't mean to drop the F word. This is an open and shut case.
We do it all the time.
It's not one of the few words that Andy doesn't like.
Sorry. This is an open and shut case. It's very obvious that Jack is the one that stabbed Armand. And then when I found out what Jack's name was, which we'll get to in another episode when it's officially brought up, it's like, Jesus, tap dancing Christ. Yes, he did it. I don't know why they decided to add this this is a question mark thing going on, like who whodunit. It's like, Jesus, this isn't like who shot JR or who ran down Austin. It's like, yeah, we know who it is, but I don't know why. Like, hopefully that is not a major plot point. Hopefully this gets resolved in episode 3 or 4, because like, what are we doing? Like, we know who did it. It's the asshole that took the retractable sword and like, you know, has swords all over their nice apartment. So that's my little rant. See, not, you know.
I hear you. It could be a red herring. Are you red herring? You know,
that's Axel's brother. But the very end, I did enjoy the fight scene, but we see Hawkeye in action, made him look like a little bit of a badass because he was missing from a lot of this episode. Like, we saw him at the beginning, and then we last saw him at dinner and when the kids came back. But then it's like basically on Kate Bishop, which I think is a good thing because, you know, I know Tim has his theories. I don't know if he's joking with the theory about what happens to Hawkeye, but she's going to take up the mantle as the new Hawkeye. In my opinion, especially for the Young Avengers. But, you know, a nice hot ending to episode 1. We see that the Tracksuit Mafia are a bunch of jobber to the stars, which is I'm okay with. But, yeah, and it made me click play on episode 2 when we get to the very end and Kate and Clint finally meet up.
Yeah, I mean, I told you guys in our little chat, like, as soon as I see this guy, I'm like, oh, that's got bad guy written all over him. He just needs to, like, twirl his mustache like Snidely Whiplash, and my daughter even says, she goes, he's just missing an eye patch. Like, what the fuck? So, see, I said it to you, Scott. It's okay. Tim, what do you think of the ending of this episode?
So what you're saying is, you think that the swordsman stabbed Armand with his sword, and that's how he died?
Yes.
It's almost so obvious that it kind of has to be a red herring, unless it's a double swerve, bro. Maybe Eleanor killed him with one of the swords that are now in her home in order to set up Jack for whatever reason. I don't know. I can't say I'm super invested in that, to be honest with you. We haven't really spent enough time with these characters or gotten to know them well enough for this to even really register. It's just sort of a thing that happens, and it's not really presented as that much of a mystery, but it's certainly a big deal, and it is going to be a big deal in the episodes that follow. So take a shot, just add it to the list of coincidences. Clint happens to show up when he does, because he's in New York at the right time to rescue Kate. Again, it's just sort of, it's more just stuff happening because the show needs it to happen, and you don't have a show if it doesn't, but in a way that feels just real scattershot. So, that was, again, leaving me a little cold. Kate, I think one of my issues also with Kate is she said, I don't know if it's in this episode or early in the next, she tells Clint that she's 22, right? So, I mean, she's a college student, but presumably almost out of college. And, like, she's already 22, and we don't have, Scott, you've name-dropped them a few times already, a Young Avengers team, right? Which makes me think, if that's what they're setting up for, isn't she going to be a little long in the tooth for a Young Avengers by the time these kids get together? I almost think they're going to go in a different direction with her. Like, they'll still do that, but maybe she won't be a part of it, because I'm not saying 22 is old, but, like, I think of the Young Avengers as being, like, teenagers. And, you know, she's going to be well into her 20s as they've established the character. I'm not just talking about the actress by the time they get around to, you know, putting that team together. And it's just, yeah, I feel like maybe they're going to go in a different direction. So I have my doubts there.
Could be trying to figure out. Now it's like when we get a new character, it's like, were they blipped or were they not blipped?
From
what I'm reading is she was not blipped.
Probably not.
Well, yeah, because she looked like, you know, let's just say it's 2012 when the Avengers thing, but in the MCU, remember, it's 2023. So you could theoretically say she was 11 in 2012, and with 2023, she's 22. So that's the way I could see it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or, I mean, it could be even – this show could be set even later, because don't they say that the events of
I think she wasn't Endgame. 11. No, I think she was younger than that in that scene.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they even say at one point in this show, like, the events of Avengers Endgame, not that they say the name of the movie, but they say the battle with Thanos was, you know, some years ago. And I'm like, really? How far after Endgame is this set?
I think 2 years is one of my best guess.
Mm. And you figure Endgame itself was set in
2023.
Yeah, because they do the 5-year jump. So, I mean, it could be 2024 or 5 in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, which puts her about 8 or 9 around the Battle of New York, which I think
that would work.
Which I think is more like appropriate. That's what she looks like and tends to act like, I guess, that age more.
That would
not,
work.
Not that there's that big a difference between 11 and that, but still. So, yeah, I mean, we have kind of differing opinions on this, which is great. About
somewhere there's a big, like, MCU timeline on some wiki that somebody has put together that perhaps we should refer to. I'll look for that during the break. How about
with
that?
Charlie Day from Always Sunny, like,
yeah.
All right. Well, very cool. And, you know, as Tim alluded to, we are going to take a break because we're going to come back. You know, and discuss episode 2 in just a moment with Scott Shiflett and Tim Cable. I am Andy Atherton. Pop goes to the couch. Hawkeye. We'll be right back.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
All right, PlayStation Pop Experience. We are back talking about this new Disney Plus series, Hawkeye. They dropped 2 episodes on it, so we discussed episode 1. Now we're here on episode 2, which is titled Hide and Seek. But before we start, one thing we didn't really talk about was the casting. Up to this point of, you know, newcomers to the MCU with the addition of Haley Steinfeld as Kate Bishop. We have Tony Dalton as Jack Duquesne and Vera Farmiga as Eleanor Bishop. I mean, I'm sure there'll be more people along the way and people that, you know, are recognizable to some. Like, I had no idea who Tony Dalton is. So
Lalo Salamanca.
Okay. So we'll start with you, Tim. Tim, what do you think of the casting of well, let's just go with these three parts so far.
Tony Dalton, I don't know that I knew was going to be in this, actually. I wasn't paying that much attention to this casting beyond Haley Steinfeld, probably. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing Renner was going to be back and probably Linda Cardellini, although, as we talked about, we haven't seen that much of her. But yeah, I mean, he's got the look. I feel like he's going to make a good Jack Duquesne, just based on kind of my limited knowledge of that character. Excuse me. Certainly seems like he's going to have a different relationship with Clint and, well, a relationship at all with Kate Bishop. But, you know, good addition to the MCU. We get what's with all the sword guys all of a sudden, right? We get swordsmen right on the heels of, you know, Dane Whitman with his family crest and what in fucking blade coming into the picture. Where I don't know if we're building to something there, but like that casting. Vera, I can never say the last name.
Farmiga,
thank you. I mean, I've liked her in other projects. I don't know all that much about this character, other than just sort of the broad strokes of, you know, Kate's parents and what they do in the comics, which I guess I'm trying not to, kind of dancing around a little bit. But yeah, and Haley Steinfeld seems like a perfect Kate Bishop. I've had my gripes with how the character is being written, but I think the portrayal and the casting is as spot on as anything as we've seen in the MCU. That's just kind of that magic touch that they have of being able to cast the right people for these roles. So, yeah, I've no complaints in terms of the casting here.
All right. Scott.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Haley Steinfeld, casting. I know she had been like, you know, fans were like doing like, you know, their own casting, and they always picked her. It's just sort of like how, you know, in the late 90s, you would see the Wizard magazine and they always had Patrick Stewart as Professor X. It just seemed to fit. And it, you know, I'm not saying it's as good as Patrick Stewart as Professor X, but it feels like Tim said, with a natural fit. I didn't know who the hell Tony Dalton was, but I got bitch smacked in one of our chats when I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And was told he's in Better Call Saul. So, you know, obviously that's a show that, you know, is known for its acting and its storyline. So, you know, obviously he is a pretty good actor. And Vera Farmiga, I enjoyed her in The Departed. I know she was in Up in the Air as well, and she was in Bates. I did not watch that show, but I think that's a good casting. It's interesting to see, like, we haven't seen that much of her, so I'm interested to see if her character gets fleshed out, which it's Feige, I'm assuming, you know, until he really does me wrong. I'm just going to assume the best with the MCU, and I assume we'll see her fleshed out later on, because I didn't even know she played the mother, because, like, I saw a trailer, and she seemed like she was, like, the bad guy, the main bad guy in this. So, you know, we got four episodes, because we don't see that much of her in this episode. But we got four episodes to see if, like, you know, if she's the true bad guy in this.
Well, you will find out. So what happens in Hide and Seek? Here we go. So Kate tells Clint her name, and he asks how she got the Ronin suit. Police cars approach, and Clint tells Kate that they have to get her out of there before the police arrive. Clint takes Kate to her apartment as she rambled about what happened to her. As they walk down the street, Kate tells Clint how she trained and that she's not a total noob, and she takes Clint to the pizza shop. Her apartment is over. They go to her apartment, and Kate explains that the dog isn't hers. Clint tells her to get the suit off so that he could take it and get going. As Kate goes up to her loft to change, she calls down that she got the suit, the Ronin suit, at a black market auction. She comes back down wearing her normal clothes and carrying a bow, and asks Clint to sign it. Kate wonders if the tracksuit mafia thugs killed Armand, and Clint admits that he doesn't know. He asks if anyone saw her face, and when she says no one did, Clint tells her that the person who wore the suit made a lot of enemies. However, Kate admits that she brought the dog to her apartment first, and her name is on the buzzer. Someone outside throws Molotov cocktails through the window. Clint runs up to the window, catches the next bottle, and throws it down at the tracksuit mafia thugs who are attacking the place. As they catch on fire, Kate shoots an arrow at them, and then shoots another arrow at the fire extinguisher hanging from the apartment wall. It shoots around the apartment and out the window and hits the street below. The pizza shop owners come out to complain while Kate and Clint go to grab the dog and go. He says that they'll be back for the suit and goes out with Kate. So a bit of a hot start to this episode. Scott, what do you think of the opening banter between Kate and Clint?
Yeah, I like that because I'm pretty sure this is where he says, how old are you, 18? And she goes, no, 22. And he's like, same thing. And it's from the very start that he doesn't really have time for her shit. He seems just like he's just doing his best not to get her killed or anything. I did like, you know, the part where like the dog, and you see the dog has just like destroyed like the pizza box and everything that had been left out in episode one. The tracksuit mafia showing up, we get to see that Clint's kind of a badass because he catches the Molotov cocktail and throws it right back at him, which I thought was really cool. But then, you know, we do have like the cartoony thing where she shoots the fire extinguisher and it shoots through the house, through the apartment, and then somehow lands outside. I thought that was a tad too far. So it seemed like, you know, there being the kind of serious moment and it's like we're going for slapstick. But it was, but then we see them on the run and the Ronin suit is left behind, which it's like, damn, because the apartment was on fire. But.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tim.
Yeah. So, don't give dogs pizza, folks. This is, I don't know why I'm saying this. Just it, that bugged me, is just poor dog ownership.
I just give him the pizza crust, no cheese on it.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
my dog,
sure.
My dog farts enough. You know, he doesn't need any right. dairy in his diet to add to that.
This goddamn dog is eating whole pizzas to the point.
He's gonna be farting and shitting just up a storm, I tell you.
To the point that basically they're calling, you know, he's just pizza dog. And it just bothered me on like I'm a dog person and it just bothered me as a dog owner. Anyway,
if you walked into somebody's house and they were feeding their dog pizza, they would get a listen, motherfuckers. Right?
Probably. Yeah. I would judge them as I'm judging this scene. No, like there's not a lot to say about this. Yeah, I mean, Clint doesn't have time for Kate's shit. I don't think it's in this scene, but coming up, we're gonna learn a lot about field dressings, and that's pretty interesting for a Marvel Disney Plus show. Which I guess this is where it really reminded me of some of the older Netflix Marvel series, where it's very like on the scene as far as like making sure it's in your face that, you know, this takes place in New York. This is a very gritty type of grounded sort of reality. It's in the city, and these kind of crazy things happen. Everything seems to be happening at night, of course. So this is where I definitely got that feeling, I think, where this could be like, you know, an episode of Daredevil or Jessica Jones, something like that. And, you know, it just sort of made me miss those shows more. So I thought on the whole, they were just pretty well done and better executed than what we've seen so far in this series. I don't know. I'm just sort of, I feel like I'm going through the motions with this second episode, to tell you the truth.
All right. So the trio go to the nearby subway, and Clint says they need supplies. They go to a drugstore and buy first aid stuff, and they wait in line at the register. Clint tells Kate that he has to find a place to stash her, and he'll go back to get the suit. Kate says she knows a place. Kate takes Clint to an apartment building where her Aunt Moira lives, and buzzes another apartment. When a man answers, Kate says that she has the pizza, and the man lets her in. They go to Moira's apartment, and Kate explains that Moira is in Florida for the winter. She picks the lock, and Clint tells Kate to clean her wounds with the supplies they bought while he goes back and gets the suit, and then he's going to go back to his kids. At the apartment, the police and firemen have secured a street. Clint slips past the police and borrows a fireman's jacket from a truck, goes into Kate's apartment. The suit isn't there, and Clint goes back outside and sees a sticker on a truck window that says New York City LARPers. Clint goes back to the apartment where Kate is, and she's on the phone with Eleanor, telling her that she went back out back when the fire started. He tends to Kate's forehead wound because she cleaned it up all wrong. He tells her that he didn't get the suit. Kate tells Clint that she'd buy him a hotel room, but her mother canceled all of her credit cards because of the clock tower. After Kate leaves, Clint looks up information on the LARPers and finds a video of one of them wearing the suit. When Lila texts her father, Clint tells her to pack and have her brothers pack and be ready in a few hours. All right, Tim. So, you know, we get a little bit more of between, you know, Kate and Clint here, and we go, they go into like a, I'm guessing a Dwayne Reed, because they're like on every friggin' block in New York City. And then, you know, and Clint is on the hunt for the Ronin suit. So what'd you think of this part?
Okay, yeah. So here's our field dressing stuff, which they'd spend a strangely a long time going over the proper way to apply antiseptic and butterfly bandages. And Clint does that with his dirty hands that he does not wash. So I feel like he was not practicing what he was trying to preach there. But I know I'm not really saying anything, but I feel like the show is not really giving me much to work with here. And I will say that initially I completely misread that scene with Clint back in the apartment posing as a firefighter, and he sees the LARPer insignia or whatever. I thought those guys were like cosplaying as firefighters. And they were like, ransacking the apartment because they knew that there was like a superhero fight there or something, and that so they're trying to get close to the action and see if they could like scavenge, you know. I thought they were like not real firefighters at first, and then when we get to the actual you know, the Ren Faire LARPers or whatever that we're gonna see, it's just that, oh well, most of their membership is made up of actual firefighters, which I'm assuming these were actual firefighters. But yeah, that at first I was like, so are they, they're not real firefighters, they're just randos who like happen, like I just way overthought it and did not get that at first. So I was a real dumb, but anyway, I get it now.
Okay, well, glad you get it now. Scott.
Yeah, I actually like kind of like the scene where Clint was like cleaning up Kate's wound. It showed that, like, you know, he did care, and it showed that Kate is out of her depth with like how to like fix herself if she gets hurt. But, you know, that is also counteracted with 30 seconds before. It shows how quick she is on her feet with getting herself buzzed into the apartment, which I thought shows some ingenuity on her end. The LARPing thing, I thought it was weird that like it was on the firefighters, like on their like their truck, but
right. I think that's why it messed me up so much, because as much as you may be into LARPing, are you gonna put that sticker on like your effectively your company vehicle? You know, it's just it's weird.
Yeah, but I get it. They had to move the plot, but yeah, but firefighters just stealing shit from people's apartment. Like, that's what happened right there. That is illegal, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's like if someone died and you're in an ambulance and they're like, well, let me take their Fitbit off. They're not going to need it anymore.
Who needs a Fitbit nowadays anyway? Jesus. A dated reference for 2020, 2019. Jesus, Shiflet.
Well, I have a Fitbit on right now, Andy, so take that.
Take that.
All right, that's it.
that's it.
Equally,
I'm sure somebody out there Googled if you're allowed to put like a personal sticker on a fire truck. Also,
let me know.
I think the fact that, you know, I think the fact that they did, you know, take the one, at least the one guy takes the fucking Ronin costume, made me think. I don't think the show wants to do like bad firefight. Like, I don't think it wants to show like a, you know, New York's first responders in a negative light necessarily. So I'm like, oh, well, he must not be real firefighters. So again, just me thinking all sorts of things.
All right. So the next morning, Clint meets his kids at the hotel where they're staying and loads them into a shuttle. He then sends them to the airport without him. Lila points out that Clint has a cut on his forehead and wonders if they have anything to worry about. She says that she thought he was going to be home for Christmas, and Clint promises that he will. Kate is watching a newscast about Armand's death and witnesses saw a ninja. When Clint comes back in, he tells her to stay put until he finds a suit. Kate warns that Eleanor will come to find her if he stays put, and Eleanor owns a security company, so Kate is safest there. Clint figures that Kate isn't going to listen and tells her to get changed so that she can come with him. Clint and Kate go down the street past street performers dressed as movie heroes. Kate lectures Clint about branding and tells him that he's selling inspiration. They go to Eleanor's office, and Clint tells Kate that it's probably the last time they're going to meet. Kate goes up and barges into her mother's office and finds Jack there. Kate offers her condolences on Armand's death and then asks about the inheritance. Eleanor questions Kate about the fire in her apartment, and Kate asks if they can talk without the interloper. Jack says that Kate is testing their new dynamic because she feels threatened and says that he bought a book on how to be a stepfather. Eleanor asks Kate to join him for dinner, and Kate says that she will if she's allowed to come up with a conversation topic. Also, you know, the whole thing where they, you know, take the burner phone basically with Clinton and Kate exchange numbers, which becomes important as the author of this review tended to look out. All right. So, Scott, what did you make?
I'm sorry. I always pop at your little digs at the article for not being well written enough.
Well, that's also a pay for being lazy and not writing my own review, too. Some people prefer pods, but, you know, it's just easier to let somebody else do it.
It just pops me every time.
So the cell phone thing I thought was pretty funny because he was like, if you abuse this number, I will block you. I'll probably block you when we're done with this, but I will block you. And then, like, the next thing you know is, like, she's, like, sending him, like, three texts at a time, which I thought was pretty funny. Also very interesting, I wonder if it's going to come into play, that Kate's mom runs a security company. So I'm sure it will. Tim, you're more well-versed than me, but just very interesting that tidbit is dropped. I do like how she doesn't like Jack at all, where she just straight up calls him an interloper. And it's like, damn. And like it's from the very beginning, she doesn't like Jack, but Jack really hasn't done anything to show like why she shouldn't like him. She's just mad that her mom has moved on from her dad. Which, you know, I could see that with like if you're 14 to 16, but not when you're 22 years old. I think that's as a child of divorce, you know, get over it. But it's just very interesting to me, the little tidbits that they left, because this felt like a really like, why are you adding the scene? But it pays dividends later on, which I enjoyed. It was a little bit of breadcrumb sprinkling.
I think the security company thing has already come into play with Kate's ability to, you know, track things and find people, I guess, in that whatever system she gets into. Tim, what did you think of this part?
Well, and that's, again, where I would have liked to have seen more of that earlier in the show, where maybe, like I said, she's tracking she knows about the black market auction, or she knows about Clint's past, his misdeeds as Ronin, and she's tracking like the Ronin suit and using her resources or her mom's resources in a very proactive way. I wish we had seen something like that. I'm not saying like this is my fan fiction rewrite of the show and they didn't do that, so it sucks. It's just, I always feel like, you know, when you have these types of criticisms, it's like, well, what would you do instead? And that's just an idea, like, right? That anything else other than it just so happened, or it happened because we need this, that, and the third to happen, I think would have been an improvement. But anyway, I've said my piece on that. Yeah, the mom having a security company, bound to be significant, because why would they even
mention it?
Like, yeah, why would they get that specific about it if it's just she's a rich lady, you know, she's a rich business lady, right? So that I imagine will come into sharper focus, you know, as we keep it moving here. And yeah, I kind of am with Scott as far as how shitty Kate is towards her soon to be stepfather. It's not like she doesn't know this person. He's not just some rando. Apparently she doesn't have much respect or much regard for him, but again, it's her mom. It's her mom's life. In full agreement, you know, move the fuck on, get over yourself. That said, it seems like she's pretty well suspecting that he killed his father. So she does have some, or yeah, uncle, excuse me, has some misgivings, has some concerns that may not be misplaced actually, but you know, the mom doesn't know that, and yeah, this felt like a kind of forced confrontation. I mean, give the guy a break. You read a step parent book.
Yeah, come on, he's making the effort.
Come on.
Which, Tim, I don't know if it's because I'm a child of divorce. I laughed way too hard at that when he said that.
Mm-hmm. I did too. Well, and I am too, as you know.
Yeah.
My step-parent didn't read any step-parenting book.
Yeah, I had two of them, and they didn't read that shit.
There you go. And I was 18 when my mom remarried, and I didn't have any fucking problems with it, so...
You should call up Kate and tell her.
Yeah, listen, and I'm not even rich. You know, the rich are just different from us, is what it comes down to. In this show, like they, you know, the other thing, the mom. Oh, by the way, heard your apartment went up in a gigantic inferno. Glad you're okay. Like, that's pretty much all they say about it. And you know, just a day in the life when you're you know, living in Marvel MCU New York and you're rich as fuck.
And not for nothing, you know, if you're a security company, you ain't putting your office in Times Square. Sorry.
You're right.
Be right in the fucking middle there.
Right?
No. As a native New Yorker, no fucking way would that happen. Anyway.
And all right, this so is a, Clint you're walks talking the, about a New York that isn't attacked by aliens every other day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So Clint walks through the park looking for LARPers. He spots Grills, the person who stole the suit and is dressed in it for LARPing. When another LARPer stops Clint from approaching, he tells her that Grills stole the suit and he would like to talk to him. The woman tells Clint that he could talk to Grills when the LARPing is over at midnight. With no other choice, Clint signs up as a LARPer. Excuse me. And the people in charge insist he has to wear armor. Clint grabs mock armor and a sword and easily fights his way through the other LARPers and gets to Grills. Grills recognizes Clint and tells Clint that he fake hits Grills and takes the suit, or he real punches him and he'll still take the suit. Grills asks to kill Clint and then he'll give him the suit. Kill in quotation marks in LARPing terms. Clint refuses at first and finally agrees, and Grills says that they have to have a trial by combat. Kate calls Clint but gets Detective Caudell with the NYPD. He asks Kate to come to the station to have a chat with him and admits that she knows about the fire. Admit what she knows about the fire in her apartment. Kate tells Caudell she's at work, and as Jack gets in the elevator to leave, he agrees to meet with him the next morning. At the park, the other LARPers form a circle to Clint and Grills and can fight to the death. Grills draws out the fight, and Clint tells Grills just to kill him already. Grills finally does, and afterward, he gives Clint the suit and asks Clint if he had fun. Clint says no, he didn't. All right, Tim, I'm sure you really love this scene, so why don't you break it down?
What are we doing? Like, I get it. Like, it's cute as sort of a one-off joke, and it reminds us that the stakes of this series are pretty damn low. We're not talking about the fate of the universe or the Earth or whatever. And the balance here, it's a very contained, pretty personal story. That said, this is a long time to spend on some LARPing. And I'm not even trying to be like an asshole about people who take this up as a hobby. It's just, it's sort of a lot to drop into a 40 minute, show that's only six episodes a season. I don't know, this felt like a gigantic waste of time and a joke that went on for way too long. I wanted to jump out of my body watching this. It was very cringe.
Scott,
other end of the spectrum, I thought this was funny, and like, it was cringe. Like, everyone knew it was cringe, but the way he's like, I just want to talk to the guy. And they're like, there's all cops and firefighters, and they will cause a scene. And he's like, I'll sign up. And like, they're like, put your email address, redacted. put your name redacted, and he just does a signature. I thought it was so funny because he gives no shits. He just wants to do this, and like all those people coming at him, and he just takes them out so quickly. But then like the guy they're LARPing, and it looked like it was like Viking era stuff, and like he's like in a ninja outfit. It's like, dude, my dude, mm-hmm. what are you doing? But I do like he's like, I can take it now, or I can just punch you in the nose. And he's like, can I kill you? And he's like, I guess. But if not, I'm going to punch you in the nose and take it. Which I thought was funny. He's just giving no shits, like, how he comes off because he wants to go home to his family. That's what it means to him at the end of the day.
All right. I'm still playing. I got to tell you, this is this stash he's got. This is up there, you know, his Magnum PI stash. I mean, this is a quality stash he's got. I tell you, that is some good stash game. Anyway. Sorry, I kind of lost it right now. Clint goes to the YMCA and locks his suit in the locker while Laura is calling and telling him that he's going to be a day later. Then he has to clear things up with the tracksuit mafia. He has 5 days to keep his promise to Lila and be there for Christmas. Once he hangs up, Clint figures it's time to get himself captured. Kate has dinner with Jack and Eleanor, and she congratulates him on the dinner that he cooked. She asks Jack if he fences and says that she was a two-time state champion and knows someone. When someone's stabbing her in the back, Eleanor suggests that they move on from the swords, but Jack and Kate both agree that a common interest is good to for bonding. Kate suggests that they use blades from Jack's collection, and Eleanor says they shouldn't. When Jack agrees with her, Kate challenges him to a fencing duel, and he agrees. Jack and Kate clear space in the foyer, and Kate scores the first touch. She tells Jack not to let her win. He says that he didn't, and they go again, and Kate scores another touch, and she irritably tells him not to let her win. They go out again, and Kate scores yet another touch and asks him what he's hiding. When Jack turns away, Kate lunges at him, and he easily parries and disarms her. Eleanor asks what Kate's doing, and Kate says that she knew Jack would parry, and she was trying to prove that he's lying, which he is. Jack goes to change, and Eleanor walks away with disgust with her daughter. Kate then goes after her mother and insists that Jack is hiding something and points out that Armand was killed with a sword the same night that he threatened Eleanor. Eleanor dismisses Kate's concern and tells her daughter that she's no superhero. Jack comes in as Kate tries to tell Eleanor about the suit and the mafia, makes light of her concerns, and Eleanor tells Kate that everything will be okay. When Eleanor tells Kate that when she graduates, she'll come to work at Bishop Security, Kate says that Eleanor is always the one that made that plan. Undeterred, Eleanor promises Kate that she'll be happy where she is in a couple of years and suggests that Kate apologizes to Jack. Kate smirks and apologizes to Jack for scaring him into telling the truth. He offers Kate a butterscotch like the ones that Armand had at his house and that she saw when she was there the night he was murdered. Kate leaves, telling her mother that everything is fine and she'll call her later. All right, so we got a lot here with the whole Kate and, Eleanor and Jack dynamic, as well as Clint stashing, this really important suit in a YMCA locker. So, Scott, what's going on here?
All right. So, I didn't know that Jack was I don't know what he is. I just saw a meme where it showed these characters that they've introduced, and I was spoiled with it. I did not know Jack was the swordsman until today. So, this scene makes a whole lot more sense now that he was full of shit, and Kate knew that he was up to something, and that he was just trying not to show how good he is with this. So it shows a little bit more, and it shows that he's hiding something as well. And, you know, she may be going a little heavy-handed with it, and now we see what's going on, that she doesn't believe him. But, you know, I don't like Eleanor keep saying, oh, everything is fine. Like, she's just waving it off nonchalantly. So, you know, maybe Eleanor and Jack were in this together with something. And Eleanor seems to make plans with Kate with, like, working for her security. Kate's like, no, not at all. But, and then Clint, like, just waiting to be, like, picked up by the mafia. Like, it's weird that he's putting the Ronin suit in just a locker that could be probably broken into so quickly.
Alright. Tim?
Yeah, I was definitely thrown by the Ronin suit just being stashed like that and wondering, is he using that as bait? Well, no, it seems like he's using himself as bait. So are we just getting this thing off the board for a while? It was hard to tell what was intentional and what was just sort of a weird writing choice, I guess. But as far as Eleanor and Jack here, I mean, Kate thinks that Jack gave himself away, and you know that she really learned something here. But really, you see, you have to understand that when Jack read his step parenting book, there was a chapter devoted to let your prospective stepdaughter always win at fencing duels, even if you are quite proficient. That was the title of the chapter, actually. And so he was just again letting her win, which she said, you know, don't just make this easy for me because you're trying to get in my good graces. So he didn't give anything away, is what I'm saying. She didn't learn a goddamn thing. I'm being ridiculous, but yeah, I guess Kate was satisfied that Jack was hiding something by this little charade that she engineered, but I don't think that Eleanor was very convinced of anything, nor would anyone in their right mind by this little display. But we seem to think probably Eleanor has her own shit going on. Whether or not Kate suspects her mother of anything, I'm not too sure of yet. It's hard to read. Hard to read that into the scene. But anyway, yeah, I liked that we at least got the acknowledgement that Jack is pretty well versed in the swords play.
Yeah.
Swords
play. I had no idea. Swords I don't know men. Who the swordsman is. So, and I, again, watching stuff like Nerdist or looking and seeing stuff on the Facebook or something, you know, stuff like that comes up. All right, so
he's a goofy character.
Like we haven't seen that before. So.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, all right. So Clint stands on a sidewalk until the mafia thugs find him. They beat him and then haul him into a van. When Aaliyah says that she wants Clint alive, as Kate leaves her mother's townhouse and hails a cab, she calls Clint and leaves a message saying that she's has some clues. When she calls again, a man picks up and tells Kate that Clint take her call. Can't take her call right now. Kate hangs up and then uses Bishop's security software to track his phone. She then has a cabbie take her there. The thugs take Clint to a warehouse and tie him to a chair. He says that he's not the guy they're looking for, and they admit that they're looking for Kate, who they think is a guy. Clint realizes that the conversation is going nowhere and easily slips out of his bonds. The thugs throw their guns, and Clint asks what he know what they know about Kate, and he claims that he doesn't know her. I don't know. Fucking writer. Kate, I know. I was there waiting for Tim to pop. Kate drops into the skylight and falls on the floor. The thugs tie her and Clint to supermarket kids' riot machines, and Clint tells Kate not to talk. The head thug then goes to the next room to tell his boss that they have Clint and Kate, and it is a recognizable character only because you know, of recent casting news and of a future show that we have coming into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I actually really like this scene. It kind of is a throwback. You know, the parallels between Clint and Natasha continue, and this is very reminiscent of the scene in the beginning of the Avengers with when she was in being interrogated, but really the guy was the one giving her all the info. So, Tim, well, how do you think this episode concluded?
I didn't think of that. Yeah, that is a nice callback. I'm glad you brought that to my attention. It makes me sort of want to rewatch, if not the episode, then certainly that scene again. Because I liked how, Clint goes through all this trouble, so to speak, to get himself caught and is like, oh, God, what a waste of time. It just fits so, makes short work of these idiots so easily. And it's like, God, they didn't know anything. I can't believe I put myself through all of this. But yeah, the ending, of course we get, the red as well, like that red lighting. What does that also make you think of? Just, some of the stuff with the red room, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, a character who, I guess it sort of depends on how closely you're following, again, casting news, and also, you know, are you sort of keeping up with the movies and watching the movies in the same order as the show, and just that's where it becomes sort of an interesting dance between the two, I feel like. But I don't know. I think I'll save kind of my overall thoughts for the end here and kick it over to Scott.
All right, Scott.
Yeah, I like it because they've been shitting on the mafia the whole time. Like, even like when Clint was talking to his wife, she's like, "Really, them?" And he's like, "Yeah, I know, they're morons." And then he's like, "Come on, just tell me, just take me to your leader." And they kept saying she, and I was thinking Eleanor, because I think, you know, there's something behind this. And then at the very end, I don't know Kate Bishop. Then you hear donk, 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 because obviously she's heavy footed, then falls down. And I like how, like, they're obviously at some amusement park and they're like, "What the hell is this?" And he's like, "You know how much it is to get a, some land here in New York?" It's like, "It's very expensive to get a place like this." And they're just morons. And then, like, Kate falls in and, like, you see they're tied up. But then we see something that I didn't know. And, like, I'm trying to stay spoiler free as possible. But then I found out via that meme I saw. But I was like, "Who the hell is this?" Because you know who I thought it was? I thought it was Florence Pugh's character.
Yeah.
In I thought that, like, might have been another person that we show up, because, you know, she's been rumored to show up in this show. And we only have 4 more episodes left. So it's very interesting to see when she shows up if they're going to throw all these bad guys at us.
Yeah, she's showing up for sure. She's in the credits, and IMDb and stuff. I recognize that from, you know, the casting of the character. I mean, and you don't have to be spoiler free. I mean, you know, people are, you know, probably look up who it is, like they want to know. And yeah, it's the character Echo, which I don't know anything about. So, you know, I dug it though. I like I said, I really enjoyed the end of this episode, because it's kind of like, you know, kind of making the bad guys think that they're in control, and they're really not. It was the plan all along. And yeah, I was thinking it was going to be Eleanor, or it was going to be a, you know, twirly mustache guy. But all right, so final thoughts, and what do you think we're going to see in our next episode, Scott?
Hopefully we find out, you know, with Echo, what's going on with her. I think we see Yelena at the very end. I think Echo's just, she seems to be more of an anti-hero. So I think that arc is going to be done there. And, like, they're going to backdoor pilot their way into her show on Disney Plus. And then Yelena. And hopefully we see more of Eleanor. I enjoy her and, you know, the swordsman. You know, they only got 4 episodes left. I think the pace is going to quicken a lot more. This episode seemed a little slow compared to the first episode, and I expect it just to, you know, strap in, because this roller coaster was trucking up and we're about to go downhill now.
All right. Tim, what are your final thoughts on this episode and what we could be seeing in episode 3?
Yeah, paced really slow. I will say I'm glad that we got 2 episodes back to back like this, and I'm also glad that this is only a 6 episode commitment, because I got to be honest, I just want to get it over with sort of at this point. I'm not very invested. It's not doing much for me. I really need it to pick up the pace and get into whatever it's going to be about. Like, I need some reveals to come hot and heavy. Like, what has to be an inevitable Eleanor reveal, because this is what these Disney Plus shows love to do. Have her be the real villain or whatever. Echo, I hope, has some connection to whatever the stakes of the series are, rather than just being yet another very random and coincidental walk-on. Again, as Scott put it, a backdoor pilot, essentially. I think of her as being more of a Daredevil character. And this is why people are, I guess, speculating that should we just go ahead and say it? Like, maybe Wilson Fisk is going to be brought back for this mm-hmm. show and incorporated. Like, the Vincent D'Onofrio Wilson Fisk from Netflix is maybe going to be incorporated into the MCU proper. Because Echo was an assassin of the Kingpin in the comics, in much the way that Elektra was and Typhoid Mary was, and just a weapon to use against Daredevil, and, you know, things kind of go sideways. Notably, she is deaf. So she's sort of, you know, this counterpoint to Daredevil is the blind superhero. She is a deaf superhero who operates on like vibrational frequencies and such forth. Like, she has some enhanced abilities similar to the way Daredevil does, but not really much of an association with Hawkeye, although I believe she was the first Ronin, I want to say, in the comics.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's kind of like they're bringing all these characters together into the show that have a shared history, but that history is very, very different, right? Like, we've got the swordsman in here where comics swordsman was the guy who trained Hawkeye when he was just, you know, a random carny, basically. And, you know, he went on, he became a villain and then reformed and joined the Avengers and died and got possessed by a tree and married Mantis. But anyway, you know, I don't see any of that happening, but wouldn't that be something? Yeah, all these characters that have a sort of shared history are being incorporated into the show, but the history is totally different. So you can't really look at the comics and say, well, this is going to happen because that's how they did it in such and such event from, you know, 2006 in Marvel Comics. You can never count on that as a sure thing.
All right. Yeah, I was expecting Eleanor. Like, is she going to get a song? It was Eleanor all along. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Going to be one of those type deals.
Yeah, but hopefully, you know, Sean is back and he does not decide to take in yet another Broadway show, and we'll be here next week. But before then, guys, what do you have to point people to? Social medias and, you know, other podcasts. Scott, we'll start with you.
Just check out all the pods on the Quadapods, you know, here on the Pop feed, everyone's killing it. The PTBN Wrestling feed, the Jenny Position, and the No-So. Everyone is just, you know, busting their ass and putting out great content. And that can be found on Twitter at Scott_Shiflett.
All right. Tim, what do you got?
Okay, yeah. So subscribe to this feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Experience, and check out our sister feed as well. If you're a wrestling fan, that's Place to Be Nation Wrestling. I've got a couple of shows over there. But tons of great wrestling content if you're a fan of the sport. And certainly our good friend Jennifer Smith curates the Jenny Position, where I've got some presence as well. And finally, the North-South Connection, where you can find 9021 No-So. That's my newest show. We're really moving along that first season of Beverly Hills 90210. That's myself and JT Rosero, former sometimes guest here on Pop Goes to the Couch. So we have a rotating third seat as well. And Scott, you've been in the mix there. Not sure at this time, has that episode dropped yet?
Yes, it has dropped.
Yes, we've gotten so far ahead in our schedule, I feel like I never know what episode is coming when. So you can hear Scott, Andy, we'll get you on at some mm-hmm. point. Also, just say the word. And for anyone else who's interested, just reach out to me or to JT, if you know him. If you don't know us at all, just get in touch on social media. If you're interested in doing the podcast because you're a fan of Beverly Hills 90210. Even if you're not a fan and want to trash the show, whether you're an experienced podcaster, never done a podcast, doesn't matter. We're lining up some guests. And you can find me on Twitter. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-68. So feel free to reach out.
All right, very good. Yeah, like the guy said, the Quantapods, check everybody out. Lots of great stuff coming out. I mean, you know, everybody is really stepped up their game. New shows, new ideas are constantly coming out. Old shows are coming back. I mean, yeah, there's always something for everybody. And being as we are just on the cusp of the month of December, that means there's going to be a lot of holiday theme shows. I know for myself, I will be doing two episodes of Laughing Theater. I'll be doing group watches for Scrooged and for Christmases. So those will be dropping this month. Also, on one of my favorite platforms now to do stuff on, Stream Lounge. I recently, you know, Tim, you and I, we did Captain America, the First Avenger as part of the Blockbuster Rewatch series. Then in a few weeks, we will be doing the end of Phase 1. Can't believe I'm already through Phase 1 on this little project I'm doing. We'll be watching Disney Marvel's The Avengers from 2012. So I'm very excited to watch that with you, Scott. You know, we have you coming soon. You have picked your debut on the Stream Lounge with me. I mean, I know you've been on there with Jenny, but when you come on with me for probably this MCU rewatch, I am very excited because a lot of people love that movie. So I'm very excited to hear your thoughts on that. Also, Miranda and I will hopefully try to do another live watch, and this time we're going to do Muppet Christmas Carol. So check that out. I'm not sure when we may be doing it, but we are looking to do a little more. And I may do some solo work over there. So check it out over on Stream Lounge. Those guys are really great. They're really supportive. And I'm excited to get that opportunity over there. And of course, everything that I do on Stream Lounge, you will be released as audio-only pods on this very feed. So lots to look forward to. Check out PlayStation.com every day. All the pods are featured on there, as well as some articles. We have Paulie's Perspective. We have Trends This Week in WWE. And we have Steve's Box Office Report, as well as his Vintage Vault Previewing. So lots of fun. The Place to Be Facebook group, where lots of great fun stuff is shared and great community over there. We're wrapping up our greatest TV drama tournament. So by the time you hear the next episode, we will have crowned the greatest TV drama, and stay tuned to see what our next tournament may be, but you gotta be part of the group. So for the vacationing Sean Kidd and Scott Shiflett and Tim Capel, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us on Pop Goes to the Couch Hawkeye. We'll see you next week for episode 3. Take care, everybody.